How would you like to be the meat in the sandwich for the all-leaf? Some people get all the breaks. I want you to know that I am the oldest at this table. By whole lot. Not just in sobriety, I'm pushing 83. And I'm still working 7 days a week. I work 8 to 14 hours a day with drunks because I love them. They're my people. They're my kind. And I want them. And when I get to come to a group like this, I love every minute of it. And I want you folks to know out there, though, if you get tired of listening before I get tired of talking, you either raise your hand or leave the room, and I couldn't care which. Because they told me I could talk all afternoon. Now, Bud isn't here to defend himself, so I can tell him he told me I could. He said the rest of them haven't got anything to say anyhow. Men never do. I've had a little bit of advantage on some of you in that I was exposed to AA a long, long time ago. Over 49 years ago, my brother was a moral leper. He drank too much. And I was a big shot in the pediatric field, and I was embarrassed because he was drinking. I was having a problem with my nerves, I want you to know, and I'd been seen at that time by 22 psychiatrists, and they all said I was outrageously overworked, and I had sold them down the river one at a time, and none of them knew I drank, they said. When I meet them, wherever we're going, because we're all going the same place, I'm going to ask them if they were actually telling the truth. I don't think they were. But that moral leper brother of mine was a great embarrassment to me, and I had to do something about it because he was upsetting me. And I called a child psychiatrist in Newark, New Jersey. Now, I always thought it was proper to get a child psychiatrist because he was acting like such a baby. And I called this doctor and I said, what am I going to do with my brother who drinks too much? He said, Jerry, I don't know. He said, now wait a minute. He said, I went to a medical meeting in New York the other night and there was a guy there by the name of Bill Wilson. And he's doing something peculiar with men who drink too much. Not women, men who drink too much. That's for us. He said he gave me his card and I'll call him up. And he called our beloved Bill, and thanks be to God, he came to see my brother. It'll be 49, I think, or I can't remember whether 49 or 50 years this fall. And my brother never had another drink, thanks be to God, and AA. It was through my brother that I got to know Lois and Bill so well, because that Brooklyn apartment that looked so fancy in that video that you saw was hotter than the hinges of hell. And they came out to my brother's house. He lived up on a hill in one of the suburbs, and they came out there every weekend, and I had stopped by occasionally, you know, to look at those poor little drunks. Because I was still traveling the United States with a bunch of pediatricians and having a real gay time. Oh, of course, I was unconscious for 11 days in a hospital in San Francisco from a little too much balancing, you know, and I forgot to balance. And got a little overdose. And but you know it was my nerves, you understand that. The doctors told me it was. And so I went along and stopped to see my brother occasionally, and I was a little afraid of that word, Alcoholics Anonymous. That didn't appeal to me. I thought it should be something more dignified. And I said to Bill one day, and I was always using my hands, I still have to almost tie them behind me. And I said, Bill, how do you work that thing? I wouldn't say AA. And he hesitated. He was very slow and very quiet. He said, Jerry, don't drink. Don't take those pills. Go to meetings. And he hesitated a few minutes and he said, and shut up. And that was to be the password for me. Shut up. Because every time I turned around, somebody told me to shut up. And I didn't like that they were a rude idiot. But that's what they were. They didn't know who I was. And the problem was they did. That was the problem. I had had a background before my brother's drinking of having it around. My mother was a closet drinker. Now, in those days, nice women didn't drink. So Verna drank in the closet, and the doctor came over when she'd get out of hand and give her the new drug that cured everything, heroin. And she would be up and at him at the church social and God knows what, with a good shot of heroin, and who wouldn't? But we didn't know that, and Verna unfortunately died an alcoholic after I got sober. And I always knew when she was bombed, she'd call up at 3 o'clock in the morning and call collect. And I said, Verna, why don't you call earlier? And very indignantly she replied, I was asleep. Now, that any good alcoholic would tell you that, wouldn't they? And I couldn't see any of my relatives as being anything like I was. After all, these doctors were giving me all of the new medication. They were treating me well. As a matter of fact, we had a standing joke in the office. We had a sample closet where we put all the drugs. And they had a standing joke. We'll try the new drugs on Jerry, and if it doesn't kill her, it won't hurt the patients. And it damn near killed me. The thing is that I really like the drug alcohol, and don't any of you forget that alcohol is a drug, the oldest known drug of addiction. And any time you say you aren't a druggie, you're lying, because you are. You happen to like the liquid form, and so did I. And I kept the liquid form in my room so that there'd be plenty of it, because it was illegal. Now, at that time, cocaine was legal. It was over the counter in the tobacco store, and nobody but the farmhands used it, and it was cheap, and nobody used weeds because the Indians were in trouble, and they used weeds, that's pot, and that was in the tobacco store too, and you didn't use that. What you wanted was the illegal drug alcohol, and I wanted to be popular at 18. And I went across the Canadian border with a couple of boyfriends to run booze back. And I strapped it between my legs. I was skinny in those days, and they'd go in two hot water bottles full of booze that'd go nicely. And put cotton pants between them, and it didn't squeak. And you come back and you got 2 quarts of booze, and honey, you're popular. Because we were drinking rot gut. But I would never drink In front of my superiors, I always said, oh, no, I never drink. I had a gallon in my room so I didn't run out. Because by that time I was buying straight alcohol, medical alcohol, 180 proof. So you see, I did know a little bit about drinking. Not a whole lot, you understand, but enough. The problem was I kept asking my brother about his problem. Even after he got an AA, and he learned something that I hope you will learn. If any of your relatives ask you anything about AA, or about addiction, or about booze, or about drugs, you tell them you don't know. Ask Mary, ask Joe, ask somebody else. Because they'll tell you what an idiot you are, and they might just listen to somebody else. And that was my case. I would not listen to my brother until the crisis came. I had been in, as I say, 22 hospitals with 22 psychiatrists, and the 23rd said I was outrageously overworked and underpaid, and he put me on a year's leave of absence, and I didn't like the fact that they wrote me about it. They should have talked to me, and I told them what they could do with their job, and they did it. And I threw the best job any human being ever had right out the window, and they gave me a handsome bonus in five figures, and I went on the original bender and ended up $5,000 in debt. Locked up in a psychiatric lockup in the west side of Chicago. It took me 20 years to get honest enough to tell you how I got in that lockup. I was doing a strip tease in a Chicago nightclub with a bunch of doctors, and they didn't want it in the paper. Of course, I didn't have any problem. You understand that. I just want you to know that. It took me 6.5 long years after my brother got well for me to hit that joint. And I didn't have any place else to go. He said, honey, you made a pretty rotten mess of your life. Do you want to do something about it? I did, but I didn't want to go out with that bunch of holy rollers he was going out with, praying all the time. That Lord's Prayer was making me sick at my stomach. Because after all, I was God. Didn't you know that? And they didn't seem to. But when the chips were down and I had no place else to go, I said, yes, I do want to do something about it, with my fingers crossed. But in those days, they didn't say, would you like to go to a meeting, dear? They said, come on, we're going to a meeting. I don't feel like it. Who asked you if you felt like it? You drank every day, didn't you? And I wanted to tell them about my pills. They said, what difference does it make? Whether it's liquid or solid, or you snuff it up your nose, or what you do with it. And they said some worse things than that to me. And I thought they were vulgar. It was me that was vulgar, and I didn't know the difference. But time went on, and they dragged me to meetings. But then I went back to work and began to get big shots, you know, again, and saved a little money. And I made a great decision that when I'd been sober 8 months, I'm going to go back to Chicago from New York and join my friends and drink like a lady. Never wanted to be anything but a lady. And I bought a ticket. Not let anybody know it. I packed my suitcases. Didn't let anybody know it. I'm going to take off. And this is my spiritual awakening, my friends. Because I hated that big book. It was given to me on my birthday, and I threw it out the window and snowbank, and it had legs, and it came back on the end table. And I threw it in the garbage, and it came back a little greasy. It was a peculiar book. And the night before I was going to run away, I went to a meeting at South Orange. Bill was there. I don't know what was said. I can't tell you. But I came home that night, and that poorly written book was lying on the night table. And I picked it up. And it fell open to chapter 5, the chapter on how it works that you've just heard. And the word honest in that first paragraph was an inch high. When I got down to the 12 steps, for some reason or other, I transposed them into the first person. I admit that I am powerless over alcohol and that my life is unmanageable. And I went through them that way and closed the book and went to sleep. And in the morning, I awakened. I want to tell you that after 8.5 months, it was the first decent night's sleep I'd had. God had given me something great, a night's sleep. And He'd given me something else. He had taken from me my desire to leave AA. And that was the beginning, really, of true recovery. Yes, I was dry. Yes, I wasn't drinking or drugging. But I was not mentally ready to do anything. Even after a year, I was so confused, I heard two of my brother friends say, that sister of Oscar's may be a nice girl, but she's got a screw loose. And that wasn't exactly flattering, but I didn't really mind it. I had a terrible time, as some of you may have, keeping it simple. In my day, they used to say, keep it simple, stupid. But it was so good to have Bill and Lois in the house because they were so simple. And I want to pay special honor to the members of Al-Anon. There wasn't any Al-Anon in those days, but the women sat on one side and the men sat on the other. I was number 4 woman in the state, and the boys didn't want women in that nice little organization of theirs, and they made it very clear. And the non-alcoholic women were willing to accept me, and for this, I am extremely grateful. Be sure that you don't turn anybody away because they're young or they're old or they're female or they're male. Be careful as newcomers that you listen with a listening ear, because it's very important. Keeping it simple spiritually came to be my watchword. And then I got spirituality and religion all mixed up. You know, we go along and we don't worry. And it was another younger AA member that said, Jerry, do you have a set of standards you try to live by that you think will be acceptable to the God of your understanding if you go today? I said, yes, I do. He said, that's your spirituality. Keep it simple. And that's what Bill talked so often about. And Lois and I corresponded. Last letter I had from her was 2 months before she died. I have these letters. People say, why don't you give them to the archives? They are personal letters, and I cherish them because she was my hand holder. And in those days, husband and wife went to all meetings together, and I urge you, to do this. Let's stop the hanky-panky. This is serious business, and we need to work with things. The grace we've received is an unearned favor. And you know, God has been good to us. Dr. Ruth Fox used to say it takes 2 years to get your brains out of hock and 3 more to get them unscrambled. She just died at 93 in March. But she was a non-alcoholic who loved the alcoholic. And so as we get older in AA, we must pamper the body and prod the soul. Accept our limitations, but play an important role. Withdraw from the front, but stay in the fight. Look not to the dark, and see only the light. Avoid isolation, keep up with the crowd, and of loyal AA activities and friends be ever proud. Beware of advising except to a child, to forgetting names, you old folks, be reconciled. Refrain from being wordy, be short and concise, and regard self-pity as a cardinal vice. I, for one, recommend to all that you keep on with your AA as long as you're breathing. Not say, well, I'm an old-timer, I don't need to go now. I need AA today more than I needed it long years ago. Yes, I'm headed towards 43 years of sobriety and 83 years old. But I'm working, and I'm healthy, and I'm happy. And you know what it is? It's thanks to you young ones. God bless you.